Today we're going to be, God willing, starting the new perek. We still have a little bit to go to finish up the seventh perek of Bechoros. We're a Mem Hei, Amud Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're talking about bones of the human body. From the Gemara's perspective, there are 248 bones of the human body with fluctuation. The Gemara call says that there's a chaser, somebody who's missing, right? There's a yeser, there's someone who has an additional. So the range could be somewhere between 200 to 281 bones. But the general consensus and the general average is 248 bones. We got to this discussion because the Mishnah was describing blemishes of a Kohen, and one of the abnormalities, one of the deformities mentioned in a Kohen, or for that matter any human, is if he has an extra finger on each hand and an extra digit on each toe. So that would give an extra four fingers with all of its complementary bones. So it led the Gemara to a somewhat of a side discussion about what is the average number of bones in the human body. So the average is 248. If you have the rov minyanov, majority of the human bones of one corpse, so that'll give off tamas ohel. There was a discussion in the Gemara, which we had yesterday. Can we count the bones of the extra digit along to this count of 248 or the majority of 125? And the Gemara says it depends whether or not it is in alignment with the other fingers or it's not in alignment with the other fingers. That is the Gemara from yesterday. A little bit of an interesting story coming up now in the Gemara. How do they know? Like, how do they know human anatomy to this kind of degree?
Well, bones,
so bones you can count, but that would require you to dissect the human body. So the Gemara tells a story, and this is where we are starting from beginning of this morning. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel. So it's about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amr, a little bit more. About a dozen lines up. First words in the line are Zil Basaruba de Inchi. And the Gemara tells the story, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Maisa B'Talmidei Shel Rabbi Yishmael. So this story deals with the students of Rabbi Yishmael, Sheshalku Zona Achas, Shenizchai V'Streifa L'Melech, where she was obligated to Streifa. She was a Zona, she was a prostitute. Exactly the story behind the story. You know there's always a story behind the story, but I don't know what exactly happened over there. But regardless, though, the point is that she's chayv sreifa, and it's not clear from the Gemara. They use the opportunity. They were told to boil the body. It's unclear. Point is, however, is that they got a specimen. They got an autopsy to work with. So batku matzuba masayim v'chamishim v'shnayim. So they found 252 bones. 252. Now that is more. That's four more than the average. The average was 248, and they found 252 bones in her. So Amar Lahem, so Rabbi Shmuel says to them, Shema Biisha Bedaktim, Shahosif Lakasif Shnei Tzirim Vishnei Dalasos. So Rabbi Shmuel says, in other words, he apparently wasn't given the information that it was a woman, so he made a simple suggestion. Oh, 252? Oh, must have been a woman. They looked at the Rebbe and they, you know, how'd you know that? It was a woman. So, and the Gemara, and his answer was, well, we know that the woman has two hinges and two doors. Now, hinges and doors obviously are metaphoric. In fact, the Gemara is going to work with that metaphor. The Gemara is going to really enjoy the analogy between the two. But biologically, I'm not exactly sure what bones, extra bones we're referring to. Obviously, bones that have to do with her reproductive system, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not even 50% sure. But Tanya, Rabbi Lazar, Omer, Kashem, Shitzim, Labayas, Kach, Sim, Leisha. Just like a house has hinges, so a woman has hinges as well. Shenamar, V'tichra, V'teleid, Kinevchu, Alav, Sireha, her hinges opened up. Rabbi Yeshua, Omer, Kashem, Shitzim, Labayas, Kach, Lassos, Leisha. Just like a house has a door, a woman also has doors as well. Shenamar, Kilo, Sagar, Dalsi, Dalsai, Bitni. The doors of my betan. Okay? So that gives us now two hinges, two extra doors. Again, this is a reference to some extra bone of a woman that a male does not have. So that takes you from 248 up to 252. Again, your guess is better than my informed piece of. Oh, he actually goes through the bones, huh? He lists all 248.
Well,
it says
you got 10, and every toe has 5.
Okay. Good. Rabbi Kiva would like to put one more bone on the woman, and that's the maftech, the key. Meaning, we're really going to go with this analogy. Well, we got the hinges, we got the doors. Well, how are you going to open a door? You need a key. So there's a key. And there's a bone, according to Rabbi Akiva. It sounds like there's a machlokis in Metzius, or maybe not. Maybe it could be that there's, you know, they're arguing about, you know, whether or not to classify this as a bone or some other part of the human anatomy. Whatever the case is, Rabbi Akiva says that there's a maftech as well. Shenemar v'yiftach es rachma. Okay, the pasuk says that the now v'yiftach es rachma literally means then it was opened up, but Rabbi Akiva is playing on the word v'yiftach from the word maftech. There was a key as well. Well, Rabbi Akiva kashet to Talmid Rabbi Shmuel. Now the Gemara says now, from Rabbi Akiva's standpoint, how is he going to explain the students of Rabbi Shmuel who did actually a human dissection and actually found 252, and according to Rabbi Akiva, they should have found 253. So, Dumai did the Zutre, it's Muche Mitmach. So, look, it's a very small bone that we're discussing over here. And remember that the students of Rabbi Shmuel boiled the body in order to get down and to decompose all the way to the bone. So, it could be that that bone, because it was such a small bone, could be that it was just faded away. And that's why they didn't find it, but maybe, in fact, it was there. Amarav. V'kulei mitame ba'ohal. Now, Rav says like this, look, by the woman, we have four extra bones, and according to Rabbi Akiva, five extra bones. Okay, and we also stated in yesterday's daf that in order for a body to give off tumas ohel, you need rov, you need the majority of those bones, which means that you need 125. Rav tells us if 125 is comprised of those bones as well, meaning of the 125, three or four of them are the woman's extra bones, they don't count. They don't count to the number of 125. Shenamar. And he gives an explanation. You need universal bones. These bones are exclusive to the woman. They're not universal bones. And so therefore they don't count towards tumas ohel. You need bones that are shared both by male and female. And so you can only work with those 248 bones. So the Gemara asks a series of questions. Abai asks these questions. The pasuk in Yeshayahu describes it, sirim, these hinges on the man. So the Gemara says, siri basar. No, they're not bones. Siri basar, there's some sort of muscular hinges. V'aksiv adoni b'amarenev chutzi rai. So again, the Gemara quotes another pasuk from Daniel. So the Gemara's answer is, again, hachinam siri basar. No, they're muscular hinges. They're not actual bones. And the Gemara says, and you know I'm right, because look, the number was 248, and that's the number. If you start now adding the tsirim, these hinges of the male, so you're already, even with the male, you're going to have more than 248, you'll have 250. And we know 248 is your magic number. The Gemara quoted the Mishnah yesterday that 248 is a magic number. So truth be told is that we know it's 248. Can't be that these hinges of the man are actual extra bones. There must be some sort of muscular portion of the male, but not bones. Okay. Yes, to be other viraglov. Okay. This is the ninth psul mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, I counted up. The Mishnah gives us 10 different deformities, and this is now number 9, and that is he has an additional digit, on all four extremities, right? So an additional finger on each hand, an additional toe on each foot, and what's his story? Is he deformed? I mean, I didn't ask the question correctly. Is that considered a mom? Is that considered a blemish? What did the Mishnah say? Remember? Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. The Gemara would say, Gemara would like to know, what is this machlokas? He's symmetrical all the way around, but still, even if he's symmetrical all the way around, it's still a machlokas. Amar Rav Yitzchak Shnei Mikra Chadarshu Vati Od Milchama. So there was another battle. This is Shmuel Beis. This is the end of Shmuel Beis. This is now David waging war against Plishtim, and he's describing now the people that he's fighting. Vayi Ish Madon Etzba Yadav Etzba Raglav Sheish Vashesh. The pasuk in Shmuel Bet says that he was an Ish Madon, and he had an extra finger on each hand, an extra finger on each foot. Marsaver beganusa mishtayim, marsaver b'shevuch mishtayim. Now the pasuk was making fun of him, mocking him, ridiculing him, or the pasuk was praising him. That's the machlokus between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Meaning, what's the tone of the pasuk? Amar Rabba Mali Mali Dechsev Shesh Veshesh Esrim Varba Mispar Tzrich. Esrim Varba Mispar. Simple question: six on each hand, six on each foot, and then the pasuk says, and you know how much that is? 24. Okay. Yeah, I'm saying that's easy, right? The 248 and the 125. Okay, that takes a couple more seconds to figure out. But here, six times four. So the Gemara says, so if it just simply said six, I would have said maybe six on one hand, six on the other hand. So it says 24 to tell us that it's every hand, it's each hand, and it's each foot. Now, but if you only gave us the number 24, I might have thought it's asymmetrical. Five on one hand, seven on the other hand. Kasav shesh v'shesh, mispar. I'm sorry, mispar. And what are we going to do with that last word in that pasuk? Benisperis al gav hayad. It has to be in alignment, like we described yesterday. Where, in other words, you open up your hand, and it's not the finger is coming out in a perpendicular, but it's coming out parallel with the rest of your fingers. Tanya Rav Yehuda Ma'isa Ba'demecha Shabbat Lefnei Rabbi Tarfon Yeser B'Yadav Uveraglav Shesh V'Shesh Esrim Va'Arba. So a man came in front of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Tarfon, and he had this. He had six on one hand, six on the other hand, and six on each foot. Amro Lo Kemoscha Yarbe B'Yisrael. So he gave him a bracha. He says, wow, there should be more of you amongst Yisrael. Now, the story over here is that if he's complimenting him, it's obviously not a deformity. In other words, much like we had that discussion just a moment ago in that pasuk in Shmuel Beis, whether or not the tone describing such an individual was one of, wow, that's cool, or that's weird, right? And we didn't know what the tone was, but from Rav Yossi, his reaction to meeting somebody with this condition sounds like, that's great. We should have more of you, more Jews like you. Whether he is or isn't a Kohen is not really relevant to the discussion. In other words, we just want to know, is this considered a gross deformity, or is this considered something which is unusual, but like we like it? So the Gemara says, Misham Raya. So Amalo Rav Yossi, Misham Raya. So Rav Yossi says, that's not such a proof. Meaning, you didn't even hear Rabbi Tarfon's tone correctly. Rabbi Tarfon did not mean, wow, that's cool. Rabbi Tarfon meant, Misham Rai Kach Amar Lo, Kemoscha Yisma'atu, Mamzirei Nesine Yisrael. Meaning what Rabbi Tarfon was saying is, I hope that condition that you're showing me right now, the Mamzerim should have that condition. Or the Nesinim should have that condition. And so that people would know who is a Mamzer, who is a Nesin. People would stay away from a Mamzer and a Nesin. And basically, it would be a way of weeding out the Mamzerim and the Nesinim. Okay.
They were not politically correct.
Hasholeit b'shtei yadav, Tana Rabbanan. I made this observation yesterday. I'm going to make this observation again today. It's so interesting that the Mishnah talks about the 10th psul of the Mishnah is a Kohen is ambidextrous. Somebody who has equal dominance over his right and left hand, and that is Sholei B'Shtei Yadav. And what was his story? Again, Machlokis in the Mishnah. Rebbe says it's possible, and the Chachamim say that it's Kasha. You know what the Mishnah does not discuss? The left-handed Kohen. The left-handed Kohen does not mention as one of the psulim of the Mishnah. The Gemara quotes a Braisa, Iter. The Iter is always a term of the Gemara that it uses to describe someone who is left-handed. Iter, like in English, we say other. You know, he uses his other hand, not the right. So Tanra Itzer Ben Biyad Ben Berega Puzzle. So this Brisa starts off with a very simple fact, which is that a left-handed Kohen, and when we say left, we don't even mean left-handed, could also be left-footed as well, dominant in the left foot. You know, but back in the good old days when you used to play kickball. So which foot did you kick with?
So you could be. You could be right-handed with a dominant left foot, which I'll take credit for. That's me. And that also would be a psul as well. Now, the Tosefta, this Braisa says, without blinking, no good. Meaning that's considered psul. Now, it's interesting is that it could be, and I saw in the notes over here, he discusses this as well, it could be that he's psul, but it's not a mum. Right? And that argument, and the Ramban is quoted making that argument as well, that argument has a lot of merit to it. Because it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnahs go through all your psulim, and the Mishnah doesn't mention this individual who is ityad, who is left-handed. So it could be that he's psul, but it's not a bal mum.
It also ties in because etzba'o, every time it says etzba'o,
right. Right. So it's just the Tanur Rabbanan Inter Ben Biyad Ben Beregel Pasul Hashol B'Shtei Yadav Rabbi Posav Chachamim Machshirim Mar Savra Kichishusa Atchalta B'Yamin Umar Savra B'Riyusa Atchalta B'Small. Now what's the machlokus about the ambidextrous? The Gemara says, look, when a person is ambidextrous, you could say one of two things. You could either say that really fundamentally he's left-handed, but in other words, he has a little more strength in his right. Or you could say that he's right-handed and his left is, like, so to say, caught up with the right. So
the right-handed got weaker.
Right, the right-handed, right. Either the right-handed got weaker and comes down to the left, or the left-handed gets stronger and, you know, comes up to the right. But that's the two ways to look at someone who's ambidextrous. And so, obviously, that's the nafkamina, meaning if we're looking at him as fundamentally a right-handed person whose left hand caught up with him, but still he's fundamentally a right-handed person. If we're looking at him as fundamentally a left-handed person where his right hand is just weaker now, so they're equal, but he's fundamentally a left-handed person. So the Gemara says that's the machlokus in the Mishnah. So interesting. Where do we stand? The ambidextrous person, machlokus Rebbe and the Chachamim. So the assumption would be that the halach would be like the Chachamim. So, okay, but that doesn't, in other words, that certainly falls in line with the argument that could be that he's fundamentally right-handed, what the left hand comes up to view.
And Rabbi, yeah. if you know, what would be the nafkamina on a lefty, whether it's pasul or it's a mum? Because either way, you can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So why, you know, when the Rambam...
Right, so he quotes the Ramban, the Ramban in Yevamos. It's very interesting. So that, basically, he says in one of two ways. He says that a left-handed person does not halachically have a right hand. Meaning, the disqualification of being a lefty is simply, it's not a balmum, it's not a blemish. It's that simply you don't have a right hand. And the Torah demands that when you do the avoda, you have to do the avoda with a right hand. Right, interesting. And his right hand is not, it's obviously there, but it's not halachically a right hand. Well, yeah, that of course there'd be a mom like that. That we discussed earlier.
You're not
mechusar aver,
but you don't have it.
But you just don't have it because it's not your. In other words, the Torah demands that your dominant hand is your hand.
Right.
So for the lefty, his dominant hand is his left hand. So that means his right hand is ke'ilu.
Like as if, God forbid, paralyzed.
Yeah, or amputated. In other words, it's just not. It's halachically not there.
Okay.
So fine. Okay, that's the and the Torah demands that when you do the avodah, you have to do it with your right hand, and he doesn't have one. Okay, that's the Ramban. He quotes the Ramban from Yevamos. Okay. He also takes considers that maybe the lefty is just simply a balmum, another possibility, which is, but I told you though, the real strength of the first argument that it's not a mum is that it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. We move on. Hakushi, Hagichor Vahal Balkan. Now, I'm going to translate the Mishnah as the Gemara will conclude. Kushi is black, Gichor is red, and Balkan is white. Okay, so with exception to the Sfardim, and of course I'm simplifying and I'm generalizing, the rest of us are no good as Kohanim. Not white, not black, not red. Okay, those are your shades of, we're talking about human complexion, obviously. Those are the shades of human complexion that are disqualified as a Kohen. So you have to be somewhere in the middle. Right, Stuart, I found the Mishnah Nagayim that you were referring to. Mishnah Nagayim, second paragraph of Nagayim, says that the color of skin of a Jew is not white or not black.
It's like No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think white means me.
What? You never
again, obviously we're talking about human complexion shade, so we don't, I mean, white, we don't mean like, you know, like this. White. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's what Phil wants to suggest. I understand that, but the Gemara is not, I mean, the Mishnah over there is not giving, you know, is talking about within the spectrum of what we normally see. I mean, you're right, we do see albinos, but, okay. Hakushi, Gichava, Balkan. So, white, black, and red. Okay, I'm sorry, let me do it correctly in correct order. Black, red, and white. Hakapach, someone who is extraordinarily tall. Nana, someone who is extraordinarily short. Hacherishota, Cheresh is someone who's a deaf mute, who is not a bendas. Okay. Hashota, someone who is deranged, mentally deranged. And Shikra, somebody who's drunk. Ubale negayim tahorim. Now, if you have tsaras, but the tsaras that you have on your body is tsaras, which is tahor. Right?
Does drunk mean alcoholic, not just drunk that day?
No, it means drunk that day. Meaning, if he's an alcoholic, he's got a... He's got other issues, right? Right. That he's got more. He's got bigger life issues. But in other words, the Mishnah right now is just discussing technical blemishes that would prevent him from doing the avoda. Now, as far as saras is concerned, so there are various saras which are actually tahor. Meaning, Kohen gets a look at it and he's tahor, right? Rashi gives the example sapachas. Okay. Rashi makes the obvious point. Why doesn't the Mishnah give us an example of someone who has saras, which is tameh? So Rashi says, it doesn't take you that long to figure out. Because if he has saras, which is tameh, he can't walk into the Beis HaMikdash. He can't actually step foot in the Azara. Stepping foot in the Azara for him would be an Issur Kares. So the Mishnah is not going to give such a scenario because he's not going to be there. So obviously someone who has saras, which is tahor, so he is allowed to step foot in the Beis HaMikdash, but in the Azara, but... Problem being that it's a blemish. Psulim ba, I'm sorry, taharim psulim ba adam uksherim ba behema. Now all these things would be possible by adam, but it'd be kosher by behema. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Amir shotim in a behema, ainam in a mufcha. Now you have a shotim in a behema. We would call it like a mad dog, so to say, right? Just a crazy animal. Okay, so ainam in a mufcha, meaning there really is no psychological testing in terms of an animal to see whether or not the animal is quote-unquote normal or the animal is insane, okay? And I don't think a pleading of insanity would ever work for an animal, but it's a nomen amuvchar. In other words, that's not the best thing to offer as a carbon. Rabbi Lazar Omer, af balei hadildulim psulim ba'adam k'shem bebehema. Balei didulim, you have like various pieces of flesh coming off your body, so it's possible ba'adam, so by an adam that's considered a psul, what exactly that psul is, how are we going to label it? So I'll say simply, it's Einu Shava B'Zor Shal Aram. Okay. Uksherim be-mehema, and it would be okay by behema. Now first, let's get our color straight. Kushi is Uchma, Kushi is black, and Gichor is Chivra. Now the Gemara thinks at this point in time, Gichor is white, and Lavkan is Sumka, and Lavkan is red. The Gemara says, but that's not true. Ini v'ha ha'udam lehu. The Gemara says that you heard in the marketplace, man ba'i Lavakuni. Who wants Lavanka? Meaning someone in the market was selling a goat and he was screaming out as he was walking through the market, it's Lavanka. So Vishtake Chivre, and it turns out that it was a white goat. Allah, so the Gemara says, okay, so change. Kushi is Uchma, Kushi is black, Gichi, Gichor is Sumka is red, and Kidami Ishi, Sumka Gichi. People say that Sumka is another form of Gichi. And Lavakan is Chivri, Ka'ud Amalam, Man by Lakun Vishtake Chivri. Okay, so our colors are now straight. All right, the Mishnah in correct order is black, red, and white.
He says in here, very white.
He says very white, right?
Very.
Right, but I don't think. Right. Okay, fine. Again, we'll find, when Eliyahu comes, when Mashiach comes, we'll get a good picture of what is the correct color of a correct. What is the average color of a Jew? Okay. who knows? Right. Please, right. Kapach, Kapach Tini Rav Zvid Gavoha. The Kapach is someone who's tall. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu likes tall people. This discussion of the Gemara is so interesting to me. Aside from the fact that I'm height challenged, and obviously, you know, I should take offense, although I won't. But from this Gemara over here. But in other words, it's so funny because these are the things that are out of your control to a certain degree. So, like, in other words, right? The Gemara says, "Kol bidei shamayim," right? Chutz mi. In other words, these are things that are, you know, they're genetic. It's up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, like, what, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu's like, wow, that's tall. Oh, that's good. What do you mean? That was the Kadosh Baruch Hu who did that, right? It's just difficult to understand what exactly is meant by these Gemaras. No, they're not. Meaning, because the only thing it means when you have a mom is that you can't do the avoda in the base of Mikdash. But vis-a-vis the rest of your life, you're fine. You're not excluded. There's no real social classification over here. It just means that you can't do the avoda. Right. So we'll get to shadchanos in just a moment. The Gemara is going to talk about shadchanos. But in other words, in general, this is not class war over here. This is just simply, you can't do the avoda. So, but, it's like, in other words, the Gemara now is making a general term regarding people who are tall. Kadosh Baruch Hu likes that.
Was Moses recorded as the tallest?
Yeah, so that's also another interesting point, because the Gemara yesterday said that Moshe was 10 amas tall. So, right, and now Moshe is 10 amas tall. Now, that clearly is tall, meaning, on anyone's, radar, that's tall. And Moshe, right? I saw some of the notes discuss this as well. Some of the daf notes, like, how can Moshe be that tall? Right? He did the avoda. He did it for 7 days. All right. Anyway. Correct. So
Mishael is 20 feet. I mean, that's
20 feet, right?
Feet. I mean,
it's unbelievably tall. So Mishabech b'Baal Kol Shenema Vanochi Shmadeti Es Amorim Imneim Asher Kegova Arazim Gavo. Right, the Amorites, they were tall like cedar trees. Kadosh Baruch Hu, looked at that as something, something big. So anyway, but the Gemara is in the middle of a question, and the question is, I don't understand, why is that a Baal Mom? Why is being tall a Baal Mom? Kadosh Baruch Hu clearly is in favor. Amar Rav Papa ba'aricha shmita sanya. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not like is somebody who's tall and extraordinarily thin. So in other words, not proportionate body, right? If I may, okay, hopefully I can get away with saying something like this, but basically like Manute Bol, for those of you who speak 90s basketball. You're right, okay, fine. Amar Ish Lakish Gavoh Lo Yisa Gavois. Now we get to Shadchanos, and I guess this kind of answers my question, right? And that is that there is a certain element of control we have over height, meaning not too tall, not too short. And that is, Don't pair two tall people together. Don't pair two short people together, right? Lo yisa gavo lo yisa gavois. Shema yetsem em toran. Nanas lo yina nasas shema yetsem em etzbayi. Meaning, you get two tall people together, and the child is going to be even taller. And don't get two short people together, because then the child will be even shorter. So lavan lo yisa lavana. Don't pair two white people. Shema Yetzim and Boak, because you know what's going to come out is something which is extraordinarily white. Shachor lo yisa shchara, Shema Yetzim and Tapawach. And don't pair two black people together, because what you're going to get is something which is unusually black.
Okay. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Black that are really black, and I can't imagine it could be blacker than that.
Well, I guess I haven't traveled. My world travels. Your world travels are better than my world travels. I stay on this side of the hemisphere. I've gone to Israel, but like, in other words, I go to North America, I go to South America, so I don't see as much as you do. But I guess there's a wide range. Hacher Shoshota Vashikor. Gemara's going to be bothered by the following. Of the things mentioned in our Mishnah is included is the person who is drunk. What's wrong with that? Well, again, the life issues of drinking in general. But I'm saying, but why is that a problem? Because he's mechal avoda. Because we are discussing the seventh parak of Becharos. The seventh parak of Becharos is primarily discussion of Eino Shavu L'Zarah Shel Aaron. That's category two. What do we say about category two? He's not mechal the avoda. Not mechal the avoda. So everything Minch mentioned in these Mishnayos in the seventh parak, for the most part, are psulim, which are, you shouldn't do the avoda, but if you do, b'dieved, it's okay. Now, what's the story with the shikor doing the avoda? Avoda's no good. Done. So what bothers the Gemara is, what is the shikor doing in our Mishnayos? Doesn't belong in our Mishnayos. So the Gemara says, shikor mechel avoda, b'hadimumim, de mechel avoda, b'ayla mechshev. So it should have been listed somewhere earlier in the parak, where it was discussing blemishes that will be mechal avoda, meaning category one. So b'shar dvarim ha'mishakru medulah k'Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, well, maybe he was intoxicated, not with wine, but with other intoxicating foods, and our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda. Titanya achol devela kilos v'shasa chalav odvash nichlas l'mikdash chayav. Now, I don't fully understand, but eating figs, drinking milk or honey, maybe we're talking about date honey over here, are intoxicating. Maybe they went through some fermentation process. I'm not really sure. Doesn't matter. My lack of understanding, leave that alone. But in other words, the point is that there are other intoxicating food and drink. According to Rav Yehuda, you walk into the Beis HaMikdash and you're intoxicated with these other things, you're going to be chayef. Meaning you're... Yeah, I agree. I understood. That part I understand. Just I don't understand how milk is intoxicating, but that's fine. It's, you know, okay, possibly. Anyway, but the point is that according to Rav Yehuda, you're chayiv. Our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda. Meaning, according to our Mishnah, the Kohen in question got drunk, not on wine, on these other intoxicants, and he did the avoda. So he shouldn't, meaning that's considered a mum, but it's not mechalo. The only thing which is mechalo the avoda is only when you intoxicate yourself with wine, udaloka Rabbi Huda, and Rabbi Huda doesn't agree. Okay. Eluk shem ba'adam psulim bebehema. Things which by a human which would be fine, but not by an animal. Oso vesbino, right? You're not allowed to shecht an animal and its offspring on the same day. Now, think about that for just a moment. What? What's the corresponding case by humans? So having a father and a son serve on the same day.
Why not?
Okay, exactly. In other words,
Aaron serve on his son?
No, that's exactly the point. Meaning that by an animal that would be possible, and by a human that would be fine.
But the animal, the shechita, the service are two different categories.
All right, with you, treifa, right? A Kohen who's a treifa, that's fine. Meaning, it's not a psul. A treifa is internal. By an animal, that's a psul. Treifa meaning that by a human, it would mean that the human is right now has one of his internal organs, which is punctured or wounded, and he's going to die. But right now, he's fine. He could do the avoda. It's not a blemish. A blemish is external. Yotze dolphin, someone who comes out via cesarean. So by an animal, no good. By a human, could do the avoda, not a blemish. What we'll do with this next line of mission, I think we'll skip it. I think we will. The Hanose Nashim Ba'avera. Now, let's now talk about humans. Things that are unique to humans. Hanose Nashim Ba'avera. So let's say a Kohen marries a Grusha. Marries a divorcee. So now he comes up to do the Avoda, and we say to him, you can't do the Avoda, you're married to a Grusha. Torah says you're not allowed to be married to a grusha. You can't do the avoda. Pasal achi derenu hana. Now, interesting, says the Mishnah, that he doesn't have to divorce her. He just has to commit to divorcing her. And that's enough. And not just a commitment, but a strong commitment. Meaning, make a neder that you're not going to get benefit from her anymore. And if, as long as you commit yourself to that degree, now, fine, you can come back. He'll divorce her. In other words, he committed to divorcing her. And he made a neder to divorce her. But that's right now, that's all he needs to do. Now, he comes into contact with the dead. And he does it with a certain amount of regularity. So we say to him, you know, my friend, you got to stop doing that. And he says, I commit to, I'll stop doing that. So the Mishnah says, okay, at that point in time, you can take him back. Elu ksherim ba'adam. My boss of Espa, no. Now, the Gemara over here is going to have a super technical question, which is, can we really correspond and relate Ozo Vespino by animals to humans? And for a technical reason, not your issue, Ben, about getting shechted versus doing the avoda, but for a much more technical reason, which is, by Ozo Vespino, it's mother and its offspring. By Kohanim, it's dad. Mom's not doing the avoda. So Ilay Maharan of Anavdikava say Taishavembano, me nagva, tanya osov espano, nogbin akevas venog nogbin zacharim. We learned the Mishnah back in Chulin, osov espano. And the Mishnah tells us, fifth parak, if I remember correctly, right? And the Mishnah tells us that osov espano is only for mom and its offspring, not for dad and its offspring. Ela taisha uvana. Okay, so mom. So the Gemara says, okay, but that doesn't translate to the avoda. The kava say, hacha, kohanis uvana, kohanis ubas avoda hi. Mom's doing the avoda. Mom's not doing the avoda. So la olam Aaron of Anav dekav say hacha taishu v'no amri ben marav and mishmei derav yosi baravin ada amra zos omeres, right, a little Aramaic, a little Israel Aramaic, right, Yerushalmi Aramaic for today. Chananya he, our Mishnah is going like Chananya. Detanya osav es beno nog benekevos beno nog bezacharim Chananya omer nog bezacharim uven nekevos. According to Chananya, it does apply to Osav Espano, does apply to the father as well. Using terminology that we saw back in Chulin, Choshishin Lezera Av, we do account for the input of the father. And so therefore, according to Chananya, it correlates, meaning by Osav Espano, we could talk about dad and the offspring. By humans, we could talk about dad and his son doing the avoda. Can dad and his son do the avoda on the same day? Yes. Okay, that's exactly the point of the Mishnah. Hanose nashim tana noder v'oved yored umegarish. Like I described in the Mishnah, the Gemara says it straight out. Gemara quotes a braisa, meaning he's about to do the avoda, and then word has come out that he was married to a grusha, so he doesn't have to go home and divorce his wife right now. Just makes a commitment, supported, not just a commitment, a commitment supported by a neder, and the neder is going to go something like, I'm making a neder, I will not benefit from my wife. He could finish doing the avoda, and obviously then he's going to go home and divorce his wife because he made the neder. Now, the Gemara is worried. Even with a neder, is that really a strong commitment?
Well, baked a really good cake.
Well, and Aaron, right, that's correct, and then he says to himself, oh, if I would have known that my wife was going to bake me a cake on my return trip, I wouldn't have made that neder. And he runs over to a chacham and he tries to release himself from the neder.
What's ironic is that the get for a kohen is much more complicated than the regular get.
Correct. Right, that the end of getting. Valechush dilma azal agave chacham v'sharei leikas avet tzarich lefar tes a neder. So the Gemara says, well, there's an opinion out there that says that you have to specify your neder. And now the Chacham's going to listen to you. Well, I was doing the Avoda, and they told me I couldn't do the Avoda unless... And the Chacham, assuming he's a Chacham, which he's got to be, he's going to say, I can't release you from that neder. Are you kidding me? So, Sahanich Laman Damar Tzarech Lefaris Saneder, Laman Damar Tzarech Lefaris Saneder, Maik Lamema. Now, it's subject to a debate whether or not you have to be Mefaris Saneder. There is an opinion that says that you don't have to be. That's not the accepted halacha. But there is an opinion like that. So if you go with that opinion, so how can you make a neder strong enough where you won't just go to a chacham and release it? So he made the neder in public. So that's also subject to a debate. So what do we do? Meaning, how can he make a neder that will be strong enough where it cannot be abrogated? So Madrinan lay top of Memvava Madalif Adaas Rabim. He makes it not based on his consent, but on everybody's consent. There's a good sheet of Mikubetzis over here. Adaas Rabim. Take a look. I don't quote the sheet of Mikubetzis often. Take a look over here. Why has that become like a binding, totally committed neder if he does it al das rabim? Shita mekubetzis oz beis hatam shamati mipi mori rav yitzchak bar baruch mishum de ein adreim vecharatasam shava. De'ina rabbi mischartim becharatas achas. O bepesach achas de'in das kol echa ve'echad yachol liyoshava ledas chaveiro. Go to any board meeting. go to any homeowners association meeting. You will never find consensus. Never. And so, if you make a neder al das rabbin, meaning based on if the public would agree, so then I'll be lifted from my neder. So what a beautiful pshat. You'll never get agreement. You'll never get consensus by a group of people. Right? Alpha pisha dvar mitzvah yesh lo hafara anatzadi dekula maskimam mezchartim bedavar shaveh. And then, based on this pshat, you're going to understand the next line of Gemara, which we're about to read, which is that, but for a dvar mitzvah, that's different. Why? Because we may not have agreement or consensus by opinion, politics, right? Anything like that. But we will have consensus by a mitzvah, meaning, I know. I understand. But in other words, the general idea of we need him for a mitzvah, oh, you need him for a mitzvah? Okay. Then you'll get consensus. Right, he's right, and he needs to do. Amar Meimer Hilchasa Filamand Amar Neder Shuuda Barabim Yesh Lo Afara Al Das Rabim Ein Lo Afar VaHani Mili. Now back to the Gemara, third line down. VaHani Mili Dvar Hirshus Aval Ledvar Mitzvah Yesh Lo Afara. Even if he makes a neder Al Das Rabim, meaning not, I'm not making it based on my mindset, on my consent, but I'm making it based on the public and their consent, and as the Shita Mukubes has just explained beautifully, you're never gonna get consensus, but for a mitzvah that's different. Kiyahu, and the Gemara tells a story, a couple times in Shas. Kiyahu de Mikre Dardike. There was a Rebbe, a school teacher. Adre Rav Acha de Kapasha Biyanuka. Now Rav Acha made a neder. He says, this person's never gonna teach in this town again. He hit his kids, the Kapasha Biyanuka. So he hit his kids. I'll share with you a Rashi over here. It's a rough Rashi. Just wait. Pasha Biyanuki Rashi Malka Osamu Mesim. Yeah, that's a, right. He hit a child and Rachman Latzlan, he killed a child. Now you know why Rashi said. Yeah, I know it's a rough Rashi. You know why Rashi says that? It's very simple. Because, and I know we don't have to go back that many generations to remember, right, the Rebbe's used to hit the kids, but in other words, the Rebbe had license to hit the kid. Now, not endorsing, not condoning, right, it's, you know, but in the time, back in the times, though, that was discipline. Discipline was hitting, and he went overboard, right? And that's always a concern, right? Once you have license to hit, you don't know what that, you know, what that fine line is between hitting for discipline and hitting because you're just angry and you're abusive. So he didn't know this particular Rebbe, and they banned him, and they banned him with a neder. V'ahajar avina. And I know this, and after hearing Rashi, you're right, the conclusion of the story is going to be a little bit strange. V'ahajar avina, Ravina reinstated him. Even though they made a neder al das rabim, because he was a good Rebbe.
Weren't the Rebbe involved in his nullification? Weren't the Rebbe involved in his nullification, or they were just...
So based on what we just learned, the Shita Mekubetz says it was a Dvar Mitzvah, meaning we needed a Rebbe in town, and apparently nobody was as good as him. So the assumption is that, okay, for a Mitzvah it's different. Right. Again, there's obviously more to what's going on over here, but just the basic idea that for a mitzvah it's different. I know the example that the Gemara gave us is rough, and especially with Rashi's pshat, it's even rougher. But that's the basic idea that you will find consensus on a mitzvah. Okay. Hametam la meisim ma'ishna hachad desanalei desagalei bekabala ma'ishna hasam demadrinan le. Gemara asks a question which we all kind of know the answer to already. The Gemara is going to very quickly surmise what the answer is. And that is, in the Mishnah, there were two Kohanim that we described needed to make a commitment. One who was married to a Grusha, So he needed to commit to divorce his wife, but not just a commitment with a neder. And then the other case of the Mishnah was a Kohen who, for some reason, just finds himself coming into contact with the dead all the time. And we say to him, please stop. And he says, okay, I commit. I won't do that again. And that's enough. And he doesn't need to make a neder. And the Gemara just wants to know why. Why does he need to make a neder? The Gemara's answer is very simple. Hatsam Yitzor Takfo. Aaron, I'll go to your example over here. Right? In other words, the Yetzer Hara, he came home and she made a really good cake. I'm not sure if that's the Yetzer Hara that the Gemara is referring to over here, but you understand. Meaning, right, the basic point is that it's you know, for him to separate from his wife is going to obviously be a harder separation, and so therefore he needs to make a neder. Hajalach Moma Melu, so that is the end of the seventh parak, and let's begin now the eighth parak of Becharos. Eighth parak is really nuts and bolts. It's really some of the more basic discussions. It is a parak. It's a longer parak, but really now deals with the basic definition of who's a Bechor. What is considered a firstborn? Now, there are two basic halachas that we are going to be discussing. Halacha number one is a Bechor l'nachala, meaning that when you're the firstborn of the family, so you get pishnayim. You get double what everyone else gets, okay? Any firstborns in this room, so you should know, you're entitled. I know probate law, seems to be a lost and forgotten halacha in terms of giving your firstborn double, but aliba de hilchasa, according to the letter of the law, so you're entitled to pishnayim. You get double, okay? Another halacha by Bechor, again, we're talking about humans right now, we're not talking about animals. Another halacha by Bechor is that you also are property of the Kohen. To what degree I really mean by that, I know, right, I've heard Shiram about, you know, to what degree. Everyone been to a pigeon of Ben, and you see the dialogue between you and the Kohen, right? Do you want my son or do you want the five Salim? It like almost sounds like there's an option of like actually giving your firstborn son to the Kohen.
What happens if the Kohen says I want the child?
You can find another Kohen quick.
4 years of college.
Right. Yeah, right. You, yes. Take the, you know, just the first, like, I'd say 15 or 16 years, let the Kohen take it, you know.
After that,
anyway, come back, you know, and then reclaim your child. Okay. And there are basically going to be, and this is what's called Bechor LaKohen. Okay?
In case of Shemuel, the Kohen took it, right?
The Kohen took Shemuel. Oh, yeah. That's right. Now, in terms of these two halachas, they are guided by two totally separate criteria. Okay? And they're basically like this. When it becomes Bechor LaKohen, I'm going the other way now. When it becomes Bechor LaKohen, so the criteria is very simple, it's Petarechem. It's got to break through the opening of the mother's womb, the mother's canal. That is the criteria of Bechor LaKohen.
If the Kohen has two wives, then two Bechor LaKohen?
Just wait, watch. Once you get your basic rules down, you'll know all the you'll get all the answers. So for Bechor LaKohen, so your criteria is Petarechem. That's it. Period. So in other words, it's got to be the first one coming out of the mother, and not just the mother, but the mother's actual canal. That is the Bechor LaKohen. What about Bechor LaNachala? Different criteria. The Torah says, V'hu Reishis Ono. Right? It is the father. So number one, it's got to be the father's firstborn. But more than that, and you'll see the Gemara Rashi quotes the Drasha right here on the Daf, more than that, it's got to be somebody who the father really has an attachment to. Now, how do we understand that attachment? How do we create that attachment? It's not that they have a baseball catch later in life, although for me that's it's an important criteria. you'll see how we create that attachment. Okay, so again, Bechor LaKohen is Petarechem, Bechor LaNachala is racious or no, it's basically some attachment. Yesh Bechor LaNachala Vein Bechor LaKohen. Bechor LaKohen Vein Bechor LaNachala. Bechor LaNachala U LaKohen. V'yesh Ein Bechor Lo LaNachala V'lo LaKohen. So essentially now the Mishnah gives us a heading, and the heading is, we're going to talk now about four categories. You could be a Bechor for Kohen, and not for Nachla, for Nachla, not for Kohen, for both or for neither, right? That those are your four different permutations of how you could be. Now, that clock is slow. It's already past 8. So we'll stop. Yeah, so we'll stop over here, and tomorrow we'll pick it up right away from the four different criteria of Bechor. Okay, this is, as Prakim go now, this is going to be basics. Basics in terms of who is and who is not a Bechor.